Hey everyone, thanks for joining Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Farah Schutz will join us shortly. Here's what we're looking at. A spike in overtime spending for city employees. WTTW News investigates.
You've got to restore public safety.
I've never said I was going to defund the police.
Messaging in the race for mayor. Our Spotlight Politics team weighs in. The former official who oversaw Chicago police reforms talks solutions for the department. And a 100-year-old Illinois artist blends her love of American history and watercoloring. And now to Paris with our top story tonight.
Right, as the WTTW News investigation finds a sharp increase in overtime paid to city employees. That despite years of promises by Mayor Lori Lightfoot to get it under control. The investigation comes from WTTW News reporters Heather Sharone and Jared Rutecki. And Heather joins us now with what she and Jared found. Heather, break the numbers down for us. How much did city employees earn working overtime in 2022?
The total amount is at least $410 million, and that represents a 33% increase over 2021. Nearly half of that amount, $210.5 million, went to members of the police department, and that represents a 56% increase from 2022. The city spent more on overtime in 2022 than it did in 2020, which of course included a global pandemic, civil unrest, and a crime surge that has yet to recede.
Right, and so there was a ton of overtime in that year, and it's kind of stunning that there's more overtime in 2022. We all saw the deputy superintendent, Eric Carter, canceling days off, stuff like that. Why was there so much overtime?
Well, you nailed it right on the head. Mayor Lori Lightfoot made no bones about it that the police were going to get a handle on this crime surge, and in many cases, that meant that they had their days off canceled. The inspector general found that more than 1,000 officers worked at one point 11 days straight, and that adds up to a huge overtime bill.
But that doesn't really comport with what she said in April of 2020, that the departments needed to stop spending like a drunken sailor. So how did they respond to what you uncovered?
Well, neither the police department nor the mayor's office would respond to our questions. They said they haven't finished their tabulations for overtime in 2022, but there's no doubt that this spending has not been, by any account, reined in.
Definitely not abated yet. You also reached out to the Inspector General, Deborah Witzberg. That office in 2017 found that excessive amounts of overtime are linked to burnout, misconduct, making misconduct and abuse more likely. So what did she have to say about this massive amount?
That it's an indication the city has a systemic problem, and that an indication that the city for much of the past 4 years has lurched from crisis to crisis.
This might be a question to pose at one of these mayoral debates
indeed.
For Malice and Johnson. All right, Heather, thanks very much.
Thanks, Paris.
And you can read Heather and Jared's full story on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. Back to Brandis with some more of tonight's top stories.
In Paris, in the ongoing dispute over the Little Village Discount Mall, vendors have filed an emergency injunction against the mall's owner and developers to stave off eviction.
They made it special by their commitment to making it an important cultural and commercial anchor for the Little Village community. Now, these developers want to come in and take all the goodwill that's been built up by these vendors over these years and say, you're not really tenants. We can kick you out whenever we want.
Advocates and attorneys say Novak Construction has given about 40 discount mall vendors until March 26th to vacate. 25th Ward Alderman Byron Sigcho Lopez, standing alongside the vendors today, says they were promised help in finding new locations, but that support has not materialized. They're asking a Cook County judge to intervene. Parents of Chicago Public School students will be getting more access to how Board of Education members make decisions that affect their students. Today, the Board of Education announced it will start making briefings for board members open to the public the week before the monthly board meeting.
We think this is important to increase transparency. Also, this will mean that the community writ large has access to any given month's agenda earlier, which we believe will foster more authentic community engagement so that the community can have more advance notice on what items are going to come up for the month.
This change starts in May. Previously, CPS staff would brief board members two at a time in private meetings in advance of the public full board meetings. Additionally, the board says it'll hold more of its monthly meetings out in the community. The currently appointed board will transition to an elected board starting next year. Chicago area Starbucks workers joined in a national strike today. Workers at this Edgewater Starbucks took to the picket lines to support unionized Starbucks workers trying for their first labor contract. The Edgewater Starbucks is one of seven city locations that are unionized. The National Labor Relations Board has ruled the company has committed several labor violations in its campaign to halt unionization at its stores. And with that runoff election less than 2 weeks away, don't forget to visit our WTTW News voter guide for more information on the candidates for mayor and city council. You can search by name, race, or ward and find out where candidates stand on the issues in their own words. All of that is at WTTW.com/voter guide. Up next in the program, the former official who oversaw police reforms shares his recommendations for Chicago's next top cop. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by Alexandra and John Nichols, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Task number one for the next mayor is picking a new police superintendent. Beyond getting crime down, the next police chief will be tasked with upping the pace of reform to keep up with the federal consent decree. The Chicago Police Department's former point person on that was fired after a dispute with former superintendent David Brown. He argued that Brown's moves would hurt the reform efforts. And joining us is that former officer, Robert Boyk, former executive director of the Chicago Police Department's Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform. He now works as an independent consultant. Definitely has an inside view of what's happening in the police department right now. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right, so we mentioned, you know, you were in charge of that department. You were fired by Superintendent Brown because you pushed back on a personnel move that he made. You argued that that was going to hurt the efforts to keep up with the consent decree. Why were you fired?
Well, I really want to focus forward and not really look back today. And today I think we had a really important piece of literature that was released that really sort of lays out a roadmap for a new mayor. And then once a new superintendent is selected, the types of things that ought to be at the core of that new superintendent to advance concepts around reform.
All right. So what would you ideally be looking for in a new superintendent?
I think there are a number of factors. Number one, that new superintendent needs to be a dynamic change agent, needs to lead from the front on reform, but also understand that building officer morale is equally important. You know, reform can be pushed from the top, but true culture change has to come from the bottom up, and that leader has to understand that. In addition to that, that leader needs to hire a dynamic leadership team that really embraces the concepts of reform and really embraces building community relationships as the essence of a crime-fighting strategy that will really impact violent crime in this city.
And there's always this debate over whether the next superintendent should come from within or without of the police department. Are there any folks in the police department right now that you see as potential change agents?
Yes, absolutely. But exactly who those people are, that's not my job. That's really a job.
So you don't want to name any names right now, but you do think there are some folks in there that could be good candidates?
100%, yes.
And speaking of the consent decree, a lot has been made of the fact that CPD has been fully compliant on only 3% of the recommendations on time. What should viewers make of that percentage?
Well, I think reform isn't necessarily visible to the average person in the community. And I think really that's the opportunity for the next superintendent is really start to make those changes that are visible to the individual on the ground. At the same time, the department is different today than it was 5 years ago. I often say that if even Eddie Johnson were to come back today, I think he would find a different department than what he left. So there is change that has occurred, but that change really needs to speed up. And part of the way that happens is by having a crime-fighting strategy where the resources are devolved closer to the community, where those resources are based on a particular geography, and where those officers are requested to build relationships every single day. And community policing is the primary objective that officers engage in, as opposed to other types of activity.
And the report that you mentioned earlier basically comes to the conclusion that CPD has to be a department that is focused on community policing. So what exactly does that mean? What is the definition of that?
That's a great question. So first and foremost, the department currently is made up of certain specialized units. Those specialized units need to be broken up, and those resources need to be pushed closer to the community. Once those resources are pushed closer to the community, the department has an obligation to create geographic accountability for officers. There shouldn't be a rotation of officers who work a particular neighborhood every single day. It ought to be the same officer, depending upon the time of day, of course, for the shift change. But it needs to be the same personnel every single day, and those officers' primary focus needs to be building relationships. We have one of the lowest clearance rates in the country. The essence of why that clearance rate is one of the lowest in the country is because we have a breakdown in trust, particularly in black and brown communities in the city of Chicago. And building that trust needs to be the primary objective, not just of the police department, but of CPD leadership and the next mayor.
All right, so I want to give you an anecdote along those lines. I was in Lawndale, and I talked to the owner of a small business there, a small pharmacy, who told me if he sees something happening, you know, a gang fight or something outside, he doesn't call the cops. And because of that, people leave him alone. They know that his reputation is he's not going to call the cops on them. He's going to try and resolve it himself. So his store is fine. So within that environment, how do the police break through?
Well, individuals have to have faith that when they call the police, number one, that the police are going to maintain their confidence, where if they want to be discreet about it, that they can be discreet. The best way to do that is by having an officer that they know, an officer that works that beat every single day. That is of prime importance. And through those relationships, that business owner can then trust that that officer will do the right thing with that information and not out him.
You probably don't want to endorse anybody for mayor, but in this mayor's runoff, we have two very distinct views. On one side, more resources diverted to other kind of community programs. On the other side, hiring back 1,000 police officers. That's Paul Vallis saying that. Which approach do you think is going to get closer to what you're advocating for?
Well, first of all, I understand that there's a difference between campaigning and governing. And whoever wins the election, when they govern, the report that was released today by 21CP really is an excellent roadmap that they can follow for the steps they need to take within the police department. The truth of the matter is, the essence of what is missing in Chicago, what has happened in LA, and what has happened in New York, is a real effort to build community relationships, build trust in the community. That needs to be their primary objective.
All right, hopefully both candidates listening to that and taking that seriously. Robert Boyk, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And up next, the candidates for mayor try to refocus their messaging, so please stay with us.
With less than 2 weeks before Election Day, the candidates for mayor are still making their case to voters. And the latest in the trial that's shining a light on former House Speaker Michael Madigan's political power, all that in tonight's Spotlight Politics, of course. Heather Sharone, Amanda Vinicky, and Paris Schutz. So let's start with the race between Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson. Here is what they had to say after the WGN debate last night.
Paul Vallis has a terrible resume. He has failed everywhere he has gone. Paul Vallis has never been elected to anything. He's never had to move a legislative dynamic. He's never had to do it.
Holding the line on taxes is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. I certainly do not believe that public safety is not a Republican or Democratic issue. And I think that's why I've been doing well. That's why I got into the runoff.
So, Heather, is Paul Vallis a Republican disguised as a Democrat, as his opponent, Brandon Johnson, continuously asserts?
Well, Brandon Johnson would love for Chicagoans to believe exactly that. Chicago is a Democratic town, and he thinks that will help him in this face-to-face contest. And he got a little bit of help today from former Republican gubernatorial nominee Darren Bailey, who put up a video on YouTube saying it would be a dark day if Brandon Johnson became mayor of Chicago, and to please vote for Paul Vallas. Now, Brandon Johnson's campaign blasted that video out to reporters almost immediately, and then Darren Bailey took it down. So it's clear that this is the fight that Brandon Johnson wants to have. Will it be successful? We'll have to wait and see.
Let's be clear about some of these connections to the conservative movement in Chicago. Paul Vallas filled in on conservative radio for Dan Proft, a very conservative figure in Chicago, on WIND.
And a big booster of Darren Bailey.
And a big booster of Darren Bailey many, many times, kind of touting similar phrases that Republicans were at the time, including calling J.B. Pritzker a tyrant for shutting down the state.
Dictator, I believe.
Dictator,
was the
I'm sorry. Dictator. Let's get, the word right.
But at the same time, I mean, so yes, Vallas has all these ties. He also has support from a lot of Democrats, though. I mean, so let's be clear here. He's got ties to Republicans. He's got ties and endorsements, including today from his former running mate. And of course, that's former Democratic Governor Pat Quinn, amongst many others.
Yeah, and a ton of older people, too.
Yeah.
Paris, did voters learn about whether Brandon Johnson will defund the police, as Paul Vallas claims he will?
Well, I think if voters have been paying attention to these debates every day, and there is one every single day, they're hearing the same thing over and over now, these platitudes. So I think what they know is Brandon Johnson has said he wants to divert about $150 million from the $2 billion police budget into other things, community programs, wellness programs. Paul Vallas has said he's going to hire 1,000 police officers and bring back a ton of the officers that have left over the last several years. Can they actually do that in office? That remains to be seen, but they've stuck to their talking points. And it is starkly different visions here.
Okay, let's get into that a little bit more, because Heather, earlier in the show, you covered this massive CPD overtime problem. Now, some might say that is clear evidence that the department needs more police and needs more people. A lot of folks will say they don't need more cops. Will Johnson's plan to promote 200 to detectives, will that help the clearance rates?
Well, that's exactly why he wants to do it, because he says that the way to reduce crime is to solve crimes. And right now, proportionally, Chicago has many fewer detectives than other big city departments like Los Angeles and New York, where the crime rate is significantly lower. So Johnson's plan says, let's put officers not on the street sort of pulling over cars and sort of, you know, running drug busts, but let's have them solve actual violent crimes, and that will help because it will get criminals off the street. It is not going to be easy, though, because, you know, you have to sort of take a test, you've got to move up through the ranks, and then it would be those new officers that are going through the academy every couple of weeks that would come on and fill those
jobs on the streets.
So now, Vallas says that's not a solution, and what you have to do is you have to sort of grow the ranks in total for that to make an issue. None of this is going to be easy. If it was easy, honestly, Lori Lightfoot would have done it many months ago.
Problem would be solved, wouldn't it? Amanda, what is the downside, though, of promoting 200 officers into detective positions? What does that do to the rank and file?
Well, so I think we just heard there, it takes rank and file officers off of their patrols and puts them in offices or solving these particular crimes. And again, that might be something that Brandon Johnson, who is, as you'll see ad nauseum in these campaign ads, once said defund the police. He said that was a political goal, not a personal goal. But certainly that has to do with he doesn't want more officers on the streets. He doesn't believe that that is the appropriate path to curbing safety. But again, there are certainly those who believe that that, in fact, is very much the case. And that, again, the reason that you have all of this overtime is because you don't have enough police officers. So it is quite a conundrum. And it's going to continue to be, I think, no matter who is mayor.
So let's shift to the ComEd 4 trial. Mike Madigan, of course, is not on trial. But this case is, you know, it's kind of pulling back the curtain on the way the former House Speaker controlled the House.
Is it ever?
Oh, yeah. Heather, Madigan will go on trial separately. But remind us what we've learned so far and who's on trial right now.
Well, like you said, we've really gotten a glimpse behind the scenes on how Mike Madigan got done what he wanted to get done. And it was never sort of straightforward. It was always him, as we've heard through testimony, talking to Mike McClain, one of the people who's on trial and very close, as saying, make this happen. I don't really want to know the details, but this is what's going to happen. And not just to staff, but also to other lawmakers. Lawmakers were doing as they were instructed. It's truly fascinating.
You can actually hear the phone calls, which is, of course, also something that is super interesting for a speaker who wasn't prone to speaking often with the press, being in public. He did a series of press conferences when he was in that battle with former Governor Bruce Rauner. But I mean, to hear him give these sort of directives, but they are super cryptic.
They're setting this up to get to the ComEd part of it. They're setting up how this all worked, how Mike McLean was Madigan's agent, and then they're going to relate this to ComEd. And, you know, let's talk about ComEd. They pay $200 million to admit to this bribery scheme, and then they kind of walk away. Out of how much money did they make from these bills passing?
Right. Well,
billions?
So that's what we learned, that one of these measures, they believe, it actually made nearly $2 billion was the profit.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty good deal. A little
you
fee,
better believe
a fine
it.
You're going to pay for $2 billion profit?
If you only have to take four executives to trial and the rest of the company.
Although they're not, the company moves on.
Exactly, but the company moves on, right? So, Amanda, we've got about 20 seconds left. The defense argues that this is perfectly legal, and it's just called lobbying, everybody. Is the lobbying line a little bit blurry?
It certainly is very blurry. I mean, yes, it makes sense that you would want to please the very powerful House Speaker. Is that lobbying? Is that illegal? There's a lot more to it in the trial, but certainly some of that is just, I think, common sense and lobbying.
Some of it filed away with. It may not be illegal, but it sounds
but immoral. Some of it might be.
It's called Illinois.
It's called Illinois, everybody. And that's Spotlight Politics. Heather Sharon, Amanda Vinicky Parrish. That's Thanks, gang. Up next, a watercolorist takes on depictions of American monuments and history. But first, a look at the weather.
Over the course of 100 years, a lot can change. A local artist has been documenting some of those changes for a good part of the last century, and it's all rooted in her love for American history. Arts correspondent Angel Ito takes us to Lincoln Park to meet a centenarian who is a whiz with watercolors.
For Illinois Artist Laureate Kay Williams, there is only one focus in her work of watercolors.
I love America. Been interested in American history forever.
From the Statue of Liberty to Mount Rushmore, Smith spent 50 years traveling the country, documenting historical landmarks with her watercolors.
I didn't have a favorite location, I don't think. I paint where I need to paint and what I need to get done.
She created what would later be known as her American Legacy Collection. Now, that 250-piece collection would lead the former teacher to be honored as the Illinois Artist Laureate.
Well, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. It's recognition, and I've had a lot of recognition, thank goodness.
Now, Smith's depictions of American history have led her to receive many accolades, which include recently being honored by the city of Chicago with the Declaration of K. Smith Day on February 27th.
I'm 100 years old. Now, I'm thankful that I can do something. I do quite a bit of artwork.
Even at the age of 100 years old, Smith spends at least 1 hour a day putting her watercolor wand to the test, doing what she knows best. And she says it's what still keeps her going.
You don't have to be fast. I now have a regular schedule. I have an hour in the morning that I can paint, because that's supposed to be my relaxing hour. The next hour, I can paint, and then it's down again to rest. And when you become this age, people become very concerned about what you're doing. So I try to keep them happy. Yeah. And I couldn't do it with anything but watercolor. Watercolor is, for me, very able, very viable. And if you use good paper, and I always have very excellent paper, you can change things a lot. And so I wouldn't use anything else now, of course.
As for her still growing collection, Smith says the perfect place for her pieces is in the classroom, educating the next generation on American history.
They don't know a thing. It's really sad, it is. People don't respect the fact that we have this great right here.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Angel Ito.
The designation Illinois Artist Laureate is awarded by the Lincoln Academy of Illinois. According to the organization, it recognizes individuals who have made contributions to the betterment of humanity that have been accomplished on or in behalf of the state of Illinois. And visit our website for more information on Kay Smith and her watercolors.
And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Please join us tomorrow night live at 10. What if a train derailment happened here? That's what some Northwest suburban residents are fearing. We're live in Itasca.
And into the lab with paleontologist Neil Shubin as he prepares for a much-delayed fossil hunt in the Arctic. And now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Paris Schutz.
And I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that's proud to serve its community through pro bono legal services.